Today on the Rising Coaches Podcast.
So it varies. It's different. You know what I mean? What I tweeted about was about the high major level, but I know enough about these young coaches. I have two sons who are in this business. They got nothing from me to get their jobs. My son James, who's now with the Orlando Magic, he made $9 an hour for 2 years in the G League. Basically, you know, eating, peanut butter and jelly sandwiches. That's the old story. We've all done that. So there's a certain hunger that you have to see in young coaches.
Today's podcast is brought to you by the Rising Coaches Association, the biggest coaching tree in all of basketball. Sign up for the Rising Coaches Association now for just $120 a year and become part of our community, relationships, and development. We talk about it all the time. There's no straight lines in this profession. There's only ups and downs. You need a community that knows exactly what you're going through and has been there before to help lean on during the rough times of the industry. You need genuine relationships, not just exchanging numbers, not just meeting new people at the Final Four in the off season. You should be doing it all year round, and we provide tremendous opportunities to create those genuine relationships all through the year. And finally, development. We have so much content and so many resources so that you can work on your craft and become a better coach. Because we put such a premium and an emphasis on helping you establish new, genuine relationships, it takes all of the political BS side of the business out of the equation for you. All of that gets removed off of your plate. You can just worry about being you, making new friends in the business, and working on your craft and becoming the best coach that you can be and impacting the people that you're around on a daily basis. For more information, visit risingcoaches.com/membership on risingcoaches.com. Rising Coaches events are back. This summer, we have two live in-person events, and we can't wait to see you there. The Rising Coaches Conference West will take place in Phoenix, Arizona, June 17th through the 18th. And the Rising Coaches Conference East will be held in Atlanta, Georgia, July 6th through the 7th. Both events are right before major recruiting tournaments in those cities. So come a day early, attend the conference, and get some recruiting done while you're there. All information can be found at risingcoaches.com. Events are $199, but if you sign up before May 22nd, you can receive a $25 off discount. And if you're a Rising Coaches member, you'll receive $100 off. If you're a member, head to the member site for the coupon code and receive your discount. We can't wait to see you guys there. Welcome back to the Rising Coaches Podcast, presented by Lucio Sports. Lucio Sports is the number one app in the world for play diagramming, play animations. And if you sign up for a Rising Coaches membership today at risingcoaches.com, you get a free personal license to Lucio Sports' whiteboard app, which allows you to, again, diagram plays, animate plays. You've seen it in NBA huddles on iPads. And now it looks like the NCAA is about to allow technology into huddles. You're going to want to get ahead of that. Instead of, you know, making crazy squiggly lines that your players don't understand anymore, you can simply have your plays loaded into your iPad, press play. You can show your players the animation, and you can get through a play 3 to 4 times in a 30-second timeout. So really enhancing the efficiency and effectiveness of ATOs. They've got great statistics and numbers. Go to their website, luciosports.com, to learn more. And they just helped us launch our new Rising Coaches profile pages. So if you sign up for a Rising Coaches membership, you now have a public-facing profile page. Somebody Googles your name. Now, in addition to your bio that will show up from your school or your staff, your Rising Coaches profile page will also show up. And this gives you an opportunity to display an interactive resume, a timeline of all the places you've worked, as well as displaying any content that you've built up throughout your coaching career. So head to luciosports.com to learn more about their products. Head to risingcoaches.com to sign up for a membership today and get those benefits, as well as many, many more. Very excited about today's episode, joined by the one and only Fran Fraschilla, former head coach at St. John's in Manhattan,
Currently an ESPN analyst covering college basketball, international, Olympics, TBT, a little bit of everything. Fran, welcome to the show. We appreciate you coming on.
Thanks, Adam. I'm excited to be here. And I think you kind of know how much I love talking about basketball and particularly where it can help young coaches, rising coaches.
Absolutely.
That's always been a, you know, it's been a hot topic lately for me on Twitter, but it's really what I do now. I had a great run as a coach, 23 years. I was a head coach 9 years. And I was 43 when I got a chance to go to ESPN, which I thought was going to be a temporary break from my coaching. And I found something I love doing. Jimmy Valvano used to say, don't mess with happy. And I was happy. I got to raise two young sons who are now in the coaching profession. And I still have a great life. No stress. This is my real hair. That's black hair for my age. That's pretty good. And so, yeah, my goal now is really to mentor young coaches and offer what I say is wisdom. Wisdom to me, my definition, Adam, is a collection of failures and some successes. And so I try to pass on the things that I've learned to younger coaches.
I love it. And yeah, well, you mentioned it. You mentioned your Twitter account. Let's get right into it. You did. You put out a tweet the other day that, as you said, struck a nerve.
Yeah.
I think you had over 600 comments and likes.
That's pretty good.
Yeah, you had a lot of had a lot of interaction with that comment.
Yeah.
But in essence, you said it's hard to find, you know, talking to coaches and head coaches that you know and trust. It's hard to find young assistant coaches who are fanatic and whose head coach's success means something to them.
Yeah.
I hope I paraphrase that.
It's pretty good. No, I think that's pretty good. It's pretty accurate. You want me to expound on it?
Yeah, please. Because again, like you said, struck a nerve, struck. This is what we do within Rising Coaches.
Sure. So
struck a nerve with me as well. And I do think it's an important conversation to have because
absolutely.
I think there's things that young coaches need to hear.
Yeah.
And I think there's things, a bigger conversation about the industry as a whole that are important to talk about in the open as well. So yeah, please expound on it.
Well, you're exactly right. And I don't really think there's anybody been more of an advocate for young coaches in this profession than myself, honestly. I spend the remaining time in the off season. My ESPN season is a joke. I go from November to March and then basically have 8 months off. And when I say off, it's not off from basketball. I'm around basketball every single day, literally. And I have been since I was 14 years old. There's not a day that doesn't go by where I don't think about the game or the profession. And, you know, Twitter is tough because you only got 140 or 280 characters to expound. That one tweet came as a result of talking to a couple of high major coaching friends, head coaching friends of mine, who are trying to fill spots. And their concern was that so many of the guys, especially to get to the Division I level and the higher up level you go, are more concerned about getting a head coaching job than helping their head coach win now. We say this about players all the time, especially kids when I cover them in the Big 12 or other big leagues who want to be in the NBA. They got 1 foot in the circle, 1 foot out the door. And I had a number of head coaches tell me that, you know, these guys are more concerned about their own success than the program success. And so that's where that particular tweet came from. And quite frankly, I agree with that from what I've seen at that level. Now, as it pertains to the coaching profession overall, there's obviously many, many young, talented young coaches out there that are at different levels, JUCO, Division III, high school. And many of them want to get ahead and they don't understand how to get ahead, or they want to, but they don't have the right connections. And what I try to tell them is, number one, being good at something, being great at something, being an expert in something in basketball is extremely helpful. Where you're studying an aspect of the game year round, you become a defensive, you know, guru, whatever, offense, recruiting, you have to have some specialties that separate you from everybody else. And you have to really continue to improve there. But where it really is important, it's just the way it has been forever and ever, you have to be out in front of coaches who will hire you And the way you, the way we all did this in the old days is we worked camps. We went to practices. We went to clinics. We wrote to coaches. Now you can email them, you know. We did all those things. We went to AAU tournaments and just shook their hand. And so there's a networking aspect of getting ahead in the profession that is equally as important as really being good at the art of coaching. And so that's where I would probably want to start this conversation.
Yeah, I think that's a great place to start it. You know, kind of starting at the top, those higher level assistants that are looking for those head jobs.
Yeah.
What does that look like when, you know, your friends that mention it or things that you've noticed, what does that look like when you see an assistant that is more concerned about setting themselves up to get their own head job rather than their team winning?
Well, it all goes back to, you know, you're in Birmingham and Bear Bryant said something many, many years ago, the great football coach at Alabama, that has always resonated with me. And he said, surround yourself as a head coach with people who your success means something to. Now think about that. You know, surround yourself with people who your success means something to. And I think what some of my coaching friends were saying is it's hard to find those guys who want to make you successful first and foremost, you, the program, the players in the program, because, you know, to me, if that happens, you'll eventually shine as an assistant, you know, and I would say to young coaches, I say this all the time, 95% of your effort has to be put towards making the head coach and the program successful. There's the 5% of the time where you can fit it in that you should be promoting yourself in one way, shape, or form, writing articles on the internet, putting out videos, using social media in a way that maybe promotes your program and not necessarily yourself, but the program you're in. There's ways that you can spend 5% of your time on career development, but 95% of your time has got to be devoted to the guy that hired you, the program that hired you, the school that hired you, the players in that program, as opposed to, and I can think of a couple of guys off the top of my head that stand out to me that have always annoyed me because of their self-promotion, you see? And it's tricky because you have to balance. You know, I have friends, you know, I'll give you an example. Darren Savino, the associate head coach at UCLA, worked for me. I got him into the coaching profession at a high school. By the way, I took a chance on a high school assistant. Okay, he was a high school assistant, and I brought him to St. John's as our director of operations. And he's now the associate head coach at UCLA. He's so good at his job as far as being Mick's right-hand man that he forgets to promote himself. And so when I see these jobs come open that he's eminently qualified for, it bothers me that he's so good at that of serving Mick and the UCLA program that he doesn't spend enough time on getting to know search firm guys and, you know, being out there and being visible. So there's an art form to that as far as promoting your career, but not at the expense of the guy that's paying you or the school that's paying you.
Yeah, I do think it's a tricky one because you've got, I think each person's different, right? Some people, everyone's wired differently, and some people are capable of that balance.
Yeah.
Some people have a hard time with that balance and go too far one way. And some go too far the other way.
Yeah.
But it is, me personally, I don't think there's anything wrong as long as you're doing your job, which that's number one, of course.
Yeah.
Do your job. You're not going to get a hit job if your team's not winning anyways, right?
That's right.
Let's put that out there. But, you know, I don't think there's anything wrong with going out there, trying to meet some agents, search firm people, being active. You know, the new thing is, you know, being active on Zooms and speaking at various, you know, I know a lot of head coaches that they get upset when they see their assistant coaches speaking on a Zoom. I don't know if that's, you know, ego thing or jealousy or recruiting, but I think that whole mindset of, you know, head coaches like, I own you as an assistant coach, you know, like you serve me. I think that's a little misguided and it really should be the other way, right? The head coaches, they're the ones that should be actively promoting their guys. Hey, you need to hire my guy. He's been unbelievable. He's ready for a head job. I don't think we see enough of that. Head coaches taking to you know, their platforms to promote, you know, their staff.
Totally agree. And again, like this is there's so many right answers here. Okay.
Sure. Yeah.
You're spot on. I'll give you a story. When I was coaching at New Mexico, I had a great coaching staff out there. It's a hard job. And we were out there my first year. We were all East Coast guys. Joe Dooley, now the head coach at East Carolina, Darren Savino, now the associate head coach at UCLA, and a guy by the name of Troy Weaver, who is now the general manager to Detroit Pistons. That was my coaching staff. That's pretty good coaching staff. And after the first year, and Albuquerque, it's a beautiful place, but it's if you're an East Coast guy like we were, it's it's a long way from anywhere, okay? Beautiful place, great people. But Troy Weaver came into my office one day in the spring after our first season, and he had this look like his dog had died. And I said, "What's up?" He goes, "Boeheim called me." I said, "Yeah, cool. What do you want?" "Well, I think he wants to hire me." And it took me 5 seconds to say, "You're going. There's no choice here. You're at New Mexico and you're going to get a chance to go back to the East Coast and work for Jim Boeheim at Syracuse in the Big East. What are you sad about?" "Well, I don't know how to tell you. It's over. As long as he offers you the job, you tell him you're taking it." Well, Troy took it. And the next year he signed a kid named Carmelo Anthony. And because Troy was from DC, Carmelo was from Baltimore. But my point is, like, we've always had a great relationship since then because I looked out for his career. And when you look out for an assistant's career, they will go to war for you. They'll go over and above what even their job description is. You know, when I first got into this business, Adam, the guy that had probably the most influence on me was a coach by the name of Danny Nee. And Danny was a Digger Phelps assistant. He hired me at Ohio University. Later went on, had great success there. We had great success, worked for him. And then he later became the head coach at Nebraska. I mean, the history of Nebraska basketball, Danny has the best era, okay? So Danny hired me. He fired me 5 times, but he hired me 6. And I was never fired more than 24 hours. But he really took care of us off the court, gave us a lot of camp money. You know, we had a great team camp. He did a lot of things to show us that he cared about us. And so in return, we gave him blood, sweat, and tears. And to me, that's how that dynamic should work between the head coach and assistant. And by the way, you said something, you used the word serve. I'm a huge believer as a head coach in servant leadership. The triangle has flipped. It used to be the head coach was at the top of the triangle. That's no longer the best way to be successful. You have to flip the triangle now. A person in authority has got to be willing to be at the bottom of the triangle and serve his assistant coaches and his players. That to me is the essence of leadership in the coaching profession nowadays.
Yeah, 100% agree. And I think coaches are starting to realize that triangle has to flip for their players. Otherwise they transfer, right? Everyone's seeing that. But I think they don't flip the triangle for their staff. Some of them.
Well, I think it's the same. I think it's the same. The guys that don't flip the triangle for the players who are not servant leaders are usually the same guys that are not serving their staff.
Well, I do think there's some guys who make that adjustment for the team, but they take their staff for granted. And
you
know, when their agent's in town, okay, come in my office, close the door, get out of here. Nice to see you. No, take them to the assistant coach's office, introduce them, let them build those relationships, let them deal with ADs, like the things you talked about that you did for your staff. I mean, there's head coaches that keep the camp money. You know what I mean?
They're paying. No question.
Not a little way.
It's really human nature.
Right.
I mean, it's really, are you a good person or not? Not, you know, I mean, there are degrees of what a good person is, right? From 1 to 10 on a scale. Bad guy, good guy, you know, bad guy here, good guy here. But no, absolutely. It's the old story about just treating people the way you want to be treated. And, you know, when Danny Nee would yell at me about something I screwed up, whether it was a scouting report, or he did fire me a number of times, which was fun. You know, I went home thinking I didn't have a job the next day. But he always brought me back. It was like he always brought me back and made me feel good about myself, you know. And like he, you know, it's like when you coach a player hard and you're on them to get better, and then they have success, and they realize that this guy's tough on me, but he wants the best for me. You know, it was too late in my career, but I always recommend anything Joe Ehrman has written. Joe Ehrman is a unique guy. I don't know him. I've heard him speak at our church here in Dallas, but Joe Ehrman played for the Baltimore Colts, and then he became a high school football coach in Maryland. He kind of revolutionized my thinking, and I think a lot of us, in the sense that these are now his terms that have become universal in coaching. There's transactional coaches, mm-hmm. and there's transformational coaches, right? And this is Joe Ehrman, and it's brilliant. And I wish I knew this earlier. The transactional coach, Adam, as you know, has, hey, you do something for me, I'll do something for you. The transformational coach is, you know, I want to build a relationship with you that you can take out into the world over the next 50 years and be a great husband, father, and coach and leader or whatever it is. And to me, that's transformational leadership. It sounds trite, but it's absolutely, I think, something that's got to be embedded in to young coaches, that their relationship with their players is transformational. And it goes back to the head coach, same thing. It ties in with servant leadership. It's just, to me, it's the most, it's the essence of coaching is what it is. Servant leadership is the essence of coaching.
Absolutely. Okay, we can keep talking about this for hours, but mm-hmm. I got a lot I want to cover, so yeah. I'll keep it moving. Let's talk about hiring practice. You mentioned, you know, head coaches, they end up with assistants who are more concerned about, you know, promoting themselves rather than the team success.
Yeah.
Why are those guys being hired? Let's talk about like how hiring has been done in the profession and how are ways to improve it.
Yeah. Well, again, remember that tweet was really related to the high major level. So you got a guy who's an assistant coach at a Power Five program. He's one step away from being a head coach, right? Theoretically, you know, at a low major. So, you know, like, see, it differs in different levels, because when let's say you're a Division II coach or a JUCO coach or a low major coach, like I was when I started at Manhattan College, you're hiring. It's like a draft. You're not getting ready made guys. You can't afford the guys you want to hire when you're a first time head coach at Manhattan College. You have a limited budget. And obviously that would be true at the lower levels from D1. And so what you're doing is you're hiring on potential. You're hiring young guys who you have to teach and grow them as coaches. And so it's not smart, no offense to these bright young coaches like I thought I was 40 years ago. But Tom Izzo's not going to hire a guy with a lot of inexperience. The guys like me at the low major level or the D2 and D3 coaches, we're the guys that are going to hire the guys with potential, that we see something in them. They're hungry. They're knowledgeable. They want to learn more. They got energy. All these things are factors in why I hired guys when I was at Manhattan, a place like Manhattan College. So it varies. It's different. You know what I mean? What I tweeted about was about the high major level, but I know enough about these young coaches. I have two sons who are in this business. They got nothing from me to get their jobs. My son James, who's now with the Orlando Magic, he made $9 an hour for 2 years in the G League. Basically, you know, eating, peanut butter and jelly sandwiches. That's the old story. We've all done that. So there's a certain hunger that you have to see in young coaches. So as a general rule of thought for young coaches who are listening to this podcast, guys like me need to see hunger, passion, enthusiasm, energy, positive energy, by the way, and a certain degree of knowledge, with the idea that a 24-year-old young coach doesn't know everything, but hunger and passion. Great book by Angela Duckworth called Grit. She's a professor at Wharton, and she wrote a book that can pretty much calculate what grit means. And she determined, through all this testing, she they tested the West Point plebes that came in and why some stayed and some left. How did some really smart people decide that they couldn't make it through West Point? And she determined that the guys that made it weren't smarter. They had more grit. And grit, in her definition, is passion plus perseverance. That equals grit. And if I would say anything to any young coaches, if you don't have passion and perseverance, you're in the wrong profession.
I love it.
What's up, podcast fans? I want to share some information about one of our partners, Lucio Sports. The team at Lucio has built an integrated platform of coaching productivity and player development apps that are being used by some of the best basketball programs around the globe, helping everyone from NBA champions to youth development academies. Their innovative and competitive memorization games make it so much easier for new players and staff members to remotely get caught up to speed. With animated playbooks, drill libraries, player development planning and monitoring, engaging game plans and scouting reports, predictive play drawing, their content services team, and more, Lucio Sports has got you covered. From players to coaches to support staff and executives, use Lucio Sports to securely keep everyone in your organization on the same page with simple on-demand access to your team's entire knowledge base. For more information, check out luciosports.com. That's L-U-C-E-O sports.com.
One thing I see a lot is guys who embody what you just talked about, the passion, the grit, plus the loyalty and like unwavering support for their boss.
Right.
Because they've come up through support staff positions and they don't have recruiting experience.
No.
They never get a chance to move up. And I personally think, you know, I've done both. I came up as a yes. support staff guy.
Yes.
I've got that hurdle of, well, you don't have, you know, it's like going to the DMV and you try to get a license. You need an ID to get a new license. Well, I lost my driver's license.
Right.
So, you know, like, how do you get over that? And I think it's overrated, but I also understand the importance of recruiting experience because it did take me a year to figure out what the heck I was doing.
Yeah.
Are there ways, you know, first of all, do you agree? Do you think more guys should just be moved up? You see Duke obviously does a great job. All their assistants.
Well, that's different. See that Duke, I mean, you know, come on. Coach K can recruit by himself, really.
Well, that's true.
Yeah. Okay. So right, let me tell you what I think about that. Okay
please.
I absolutely think when you have a staff of guys, and let's say, you know, a support staff guy, in this case, Adobo, video coordinator, and you see the long-term potential in them as a coach and as a recruiter, I absolutely think you got to cultivate that. You know, your video coordinator right now, it's really funny. When I first started out in coaching, when it came to recruiting, and we're in a different time with the pandemic and hopefully we're through it, but a lot of coaches had to do a lot of recruiting this year via video because they weren't able to get out. And I would tell any young video coordinator who thinks he's just slicing up clips for scouting reports and whatnot is dive into the high school recruiting video and study what makes a guy highly ranked. And I have someone I know very well. I can't really talk about him much because I know them really well, and they're a video coordinator somewhere. And all they've done this spring is watch high school recruiting video. And I said to that person, who I know well, who has actually lived in my house at one point for 18 years, that the best way to get recruiting experience is not just networking when these AAU coaches and high school coaches come to your campus, but study what makes a good player. You know, don't look at the rankings. Just watch the tape of the Rens versus Riverside or whoever the AAU teams are playing and just figure out who the better players are without knowing who they are. And then go back and look and check and say, oh, wow, yeah, you know what? This guy's the number 9 ranked player in the country. Or this kid's not even ranked, and I thought this guy was pretty good. So there's ways as a young coach that you can actually prepare yourself for the recruiting process. And the head coach has got to recognize that and see that in you. And then again, recruiting, as you know, is not just about the ability to decide to evaluate players. It's relationships. It's, you know, knowing how to treat people. It's when a high school coach comes to campus. I'll give you a great example about recruiting. Okay. And this happened to me many, many, many years ago. I would recruit a player and spend a year recruiting that young man, writing him handwritten notes, the high school coach notes, the whole deal. You know how that works. And we wouldn't get the player. And I would stay in touch with the high school coach. And I remember one time the other assistant coach said, why are you writing that guy? You're sending him like X and O articles and we didn't even get his player. And I said, because it's the right thing to do. It's called building a relationship. Well, sure enough, 3 or 4 years later, that guy had another player. And he remembered the relationship we had built up. So one of the things I would tell young coaches is just, you know, relationships is probably the hugest part of recruiting along with evaluating.
Yeah, I agree. And the people, you know, the relationships, it's like what you said. It was hard work, determination, and discipline to stay in touch with those guys, write them letters. And you don't have to have experience with that. You know what I mean? That's hard work.
It gets back to transactional versus transformational.
Right.
I got to a point where I really enjoyed this high school coach. It just so, for example, but his kid decided to go to another school. Well, if it was transactional, it would be so long, you know, to the high school coach. But if it's transformational relationship, we're going to build this relationship, even though your student athlete went to another school. I mean, to me, that's what we talk about when we talk about, you know, transformational, because that will come back around. It's happened in my life. It's happened. It happened. It's the reason one of the reasons I got a head coaching job was transformational relationships. So if you got time for a story, I'll tell this. It'll take 2 weeks. But we had a kid who wanted to walk on at Providence College when I was an assistant coach there. And he was a Division III player, but he wanted to be a walk on at Division I. And he happened to play for the top AAU program in New Jersey and happened to be Italian. So we really hit it off. So the kid came up to Providence College just to look around. The father had a boatload of money because he was financing the AAU team, right? The travel, the uniforms. And so we brought this kid up to campus and we always took a couple walk-ons, right? He was a good high school player. And I told our coach, Rick Barnes, who's, you know, got 700 wins, that, hey, this kid wants to walk on. Coach Barnes said, great. So the family came up on a visit and I spent the entire day with the family. Rick said hello to him for 15 minutes. They went back to New Jersey. They fell in love with me. He decided to go to Duquesne because the coach at Duquesne, you ready for this, offered him a full scholarship, knowing that he would be connected to this AAU team. Cool. So he went to Duquesne, full ride. I stayed in touch with the family. He was never going to be a player. It was the right thing to do. Two years later, I'm about to sit down at the Newark Airport Marriott. I had been on a red-eye flight from LA to Newark to interview for the Manhattan College head coaching job with the athletic director at the Newark Airport Marriott. Okay. So as I walk through the restaurant, I see the AD in the back. On my way to walk back there, this kid's father jumps up out of his chair. He's having breakfast with a business associate and yells out my name. Hey, it's great to see you, Fran. I want you to meet my business partner. This is Fran Frischella from Providence. He treated my family so great. Meanwhile, my prospective AD hears everything. And it looked like a setup. It looked like I had set this guy up to be right there while I was walking to the back and, like, you know, pop up out of nowhere. And in fact, it was a transformational relationship I had developed with the family. And that made an impression on my future AD. And he hired me 3 weeks later. That's not the reason I got the job. The point is, when you treat people well in this business, it will come back around at some point.
Absolutely. Love that story. I want to get back to the evaluation part in which you talked to this anonymous video coordinator.
Yes.
About. Yeah. There isn't much out there in place to develop coaches. You know, again, with this recruiting experience thing, it's the only profession I can think of where they just kind of throw you in the deep end.
Right.
Without training. No instruction and just say, figure it out.
Yeah.
Why is there, you know, obviously that's what we try to do with Rising Coaches.
Right.
But why isn't there more? I mean, you see other sports have, you know, certification and professional development, other industries have it. Have you ever seen that in your entire, you've been in the game longer, than I have. Have you seen anything come about?
You know, yeah, a couple things come to mind. I remember at Ohio University, we brought a guest speaker in. I wish I could remember his name now, but he gave us a recruiting, like, there are people who, like, recruiting is sales. It is. It's sales. And it's about being a people person. It's about developing those relationships we talked about. And there are people that do recruiting seminars that you can actually pick up some great tips. I'll give you a great tip. When you go into a home visit and you have that booklet for the kid laying out the next 4 years, never hand out the booklet at the beginning of a home visit, because the family will not listen to anything you say. They're going to be reading the book while you're talking. See, that's just a little tip, okay? You know, these are the things that you learn through the years, you know? But what I would say is you got to ask a lot of questions. When I was a young coach at Ohio U, Xavier University hired a high school coach from West Virginia. And I saw him all summer at open gyms and AAU tournaments. And everywhere we went, he asked me questions. How many times a week do you write a kid? How often do you write the family? How often do you call? What are you looking for when you go? The guy's name was Skip Prosser, the late Skip Prosser, you know, just a tremendous human being. He asked me a million questions. And like an idiot, I gave away my secrets to him because he was such a good guy. But, you know, you have to just be curious and ask. If you're the video coordinator on your staff, ask to sit in the recruiting meetings. Talk to the assistant coaches who already have that experience and ask them. Ask other coaches that you know. You got to have a curiosity about these type of things that will make you a good coach. So, you know, again, recruiting, there's no science to it. It's just about how do you relate to people? What are the mechanics of college recruiting? And just kind of study and keep your eyes and ears open. That's how I did it. I made mistakes along the way, and you get good at it. You know, you develop a feel for recruiting, and you develop what I'd also call an educated eye for what makes a player a good player.
Yeah, that is the part that I think is also missing is mm-hmm. I think coaches, there's a lot of people out there in the industry that don't know how to evaluate. And
very true.
There's not much education, and it's a personal thing. You got to recruit to your program, but that seems like a lost art. And you go to AAU events and everyone's on their phone.
Yes. Yeah. No doubt. Listen, if I was counseling a young coach, I don't care if it was JUCO, D3, D2, you know, low D1, sit away from everybody. You know, NBA scouts do that fairly well. The good ones sit away from everybody. And don't get caught up in, you know, gossiping and talking, but watch the games. You know, I mean, I signed 18 different guys that ended up playing in the NBA as an assistant and a head coach. But some of the best feelings in the world was to sign a guy that nobody had on their list anywhere. He ended up being a really good player because you were the only guy in the gym that day, or that, you know, you drove 5 hours from the Las Vegas, not 5 hours, but 5 miles or 10 miles from the Las Vegas Strip to go watch some, you know, AAU summer event in a far gym away from, you know, the main action at those Vegas AAU tournaments. And I used to love that in the old days when I was a young coach, it's just going out and finding sleepers. And it's a great, we actually recruited a kid at Ohio U that ended up a first round pick. The Houston Rockets, who once scored 60 points in a college game, Dave Jamerson, played for us in the late 80s. I think he was a first-round pick in 1990 or 91. But he had Bob Huggins wanted him to walk on at Akron. And we were the only major offer he had was Ohio University. 6'5", white kid who was a great shooter. One of the greatest shooters ever playing the MAC. Nobody recruited him. We saw him. I fell in love with him. I recruited the daylights out of him. You know, ended up being a first round pick. Those are the great stories, not the kids that are on these lists that you already know they can play. So you got to train your eye, and it takes time. Got to watch a lot of games and watch a lot of film.
Yeah. And I remember I was so fortunate as a manager. I worked for Richard Schmidt at University of Tampa, who's mm-hmm. a legend, Hall of Famer.
Yeah.
700 wins. And he used to grab me in the summertime and we'd watch just the two of us. And he didn't have to do this. I was a manager. Yeah. We would watch recruits game film together.
Yeah.
And I think he just wanted somebody to watch with him.
Sure.
But I would just soak all of that in. I wish more programs did stuff to develop their young coaches like this.
Yeah. Well, Adam, you're right. You're right. No, this is something. This is something I'm passionate about now as somebody who has the platform I have, whether it's ESPN or Twitter or clinics, Zoom clinics, is this area, because I had a guy who did that for me in Danny Nee. Now I work for Gary Williams and Rick Barnes, also three great coaches, but Danny had the most influence on me because, see, when he was with Digger Phelps. And people don't remember this, but you'd remember. But Digger Phelps was at Notre Dame, had great success. And what he did with his assistant coaches, he trained them to be head coaches. You know, like when I worked for Danny Nee at 23, 24, 25 at Ohio U in the MAC, a good mid-major league, like here's what he would do. One year he'd say, okay, and I work with a guy named Billy Hahn, who's a legend, yes, who's now retired and we were young coaches together, and Billy, you know, Billy was, he's in Morgantown, retired after working with Bob Huggins. But one summer I would be the recruiting coordinator. Billy would run the camp. The next summer we'd flip it. Billy would handle the recruiting organization of where to go, who to go see. And I would run the camp. We split up scouting. You know, he had half the scouting. I had half the scouting. I was in charge of zone defenses. And this is a 23, 24-year-old kid. And Billy was in charge of something else, X and OY. So we went out on the court. Danny would say, all right, you're teaching our 2-3 zone. But before the season started, I'd be on his board in his office explaining all the drills to him. Here's how we're going to teach it. Here's how we're going to break it down. I can remember I went into his office once. I put up everything on the board. He goes, that's crap. I don't want to say the word. He goes, that's crap. You go back to your office and you better figure this out. But we're not teaching this. So I went back to my office, made some calls, called my friend up at Michigan State, a young coach by the name of Izzo, and said, hey, how does Judd teach the zone? What do you break? What kind of drills do you do? The point was that a head coach gave us a lot of responsibility. And we screwed up. But every time we screwed up, we figured out how to get better. And I don't think that happens enough with the coaching profession. So many of the head coaches now in Division I are worried about keeping their jobs and making money, and you know, and they're not as in tune with developing their coaching staff like they would their players, to your point at the very beginning of the conversation.
Yeah, Buzz Williams talks about it, grow your own garden. You know, mm-hmm. I think there's a lot of wisdom to that. You know, if you invest that time into your own young staff, they can grow to become exactly what you groom them to be.
Yes. Yeah. There was nothing, you know, everybody says, well, you know, becoming a head coach is totally different. And there it is. But when I got to Manhattan College as a first time head coach, first of all, I was left a really good team by Steve Lapis. And by the way, here's coaching etiquette 101 for your young coaches. If you inherit a bad team, say nothing about the previous coach or staff. If you inherit a good team like I did, praise the previous coach or staff. It's called coaching etiquette 101. But when I became a head coach at Manhattan College, honestly, sure, it's hard making every single decision that a head coach has to make, what kind of practice gear to order, who scheduling, recruiting. But I was prepared to be a head coach primarily because of Danny Nee. And because he made me do things as an assistant that prepared me to be a head coach. We'd go to a booster luncheon during the season, and we'd be walking up from our arena to Athens, Ohio is a small college town. So we had a 5-minute walk up to, you know, downtown Athens. And on the way up to booster luncheon, he says, all right, Franny, by the way, you're going to be speaking today. You're going to tell our boosters about Ball State. And we play Ball State 2 days later. So all of a sudden, I got 5 minutes to kind of think about what I'm going to talk to 200 people about. But he made me public speak. You know, when we ran a camp of 500 kids, I did lectures in front of 500 kids. Billy Hahn did the same thing. So he taught us how to be head coaches.
Yeah, such valuable experience.
Yeah.
Fran, well, we like I mentioned, we do a ton of this stuff. We'd love to have you come on at some point and lead a workshop in evals or scouting reports.
Yeah.
This is our bread and butter. And let your friends know that are having a hard time finding coaches.
They're out there.
Call us up. we field calls. I probably get 5 calls a day asking for, you know, hey, we need an ops, we need a GA, who should we hire? We are here for that service. So
yeah,
if anybody wants it, please feel free to reach out to us.
And I would say finally that there's young coaches out there that, you know, are going to be great. I know it. I mean, I know it. They're out there. And you know, those guys, the assistant coach at a JUCO is 24 years old out in Kansas making, you know, maybe they're making $500 a month and they have to, you know, work at the rec center to supplement their income. I know how many of those young guys and ladies are out there. And what I would tell them is keep grinding, passion plus perseverance, right? The grit formula. But you also got to get out and around and try to meet as many coaches as possible. And the other thing I would say finally is hitch your ride with a rising star. Okay. You don't have to know Tom Izzo or Chris Holtman to get a job. There's probably a young on the way up assistant coach who's going to be a head coach someday in the next 5 to 10 years. Get to know those guys. So when they become a head coach, you're in their orbit already. And they say, man, you know what? I got to call Adam and see if he'll come with me to Toledo or Bowling Green. No offense to those guys. They're two great coaches there. Todd Kowalczyk and Mike Uger. But that's the other thing too. Hitch a ride with a rising star. You're not going to probably get to know Tom Izzo all that well that he's going to hire you if you're a 20-year-old, 24-year-old video coordinator at Division II school. But there's going to be guys that are in your orbit that you get to meet on the recruiting trail, the summer camp trail, whatever it is, that are going to be head coaches in 5 or 10 years. And you want them to think of you and say, I'm going to call Adam Gordon and see if he's interested in coming with me.
Great advice. Fran, we appreciate you jumping on and having this important convo with us. People can find you on Twitter at Fran Fraschilla. We can see you on the TBT this summer, as well as the Olympics, right?
Yes, NBC. And thank you to ESPN for giving me a permission. But then I'll be back at it next November, calling college basketball on ESPN. And in the meantime, as you know, Adam, I think you have a good feel. I'm here to help young coaches.
Absolutely. Well, Fran, thank you so much for jumping on, and we truly appreciate it.
Thanks, Adam. Enjoyed it.